You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, beautiful listeners. Still coming to you from Prague. I'm here with the fam. Today, I thought we'd talk about money and investing. And maybe I'll mix in a little Diddy. Tell you what, let's start with Diddy. Because I can't claim to be a fan of rap music without touching on the Diddy deal. I have a friend in high school who's probably going to need to find me a new nickname. He has called me B. Diddy since high school. And his name is Scouser Dizzle. Not sure if this holds true for your high school friends, but if you were eavesdropping on our crew, let's say at the local bingo hall, no, we're not that old. Let's say you were waiting on a game of pickleball, and because, yeah, we're not so young anymore. And if you heard the names that we had for each other, the nicknames, you would know that we graduated in the 90s. I've got friends who call me B-Dizzle. I've got a buddy named Star, who I call Star Diggity. I got to back it up. Here's a story for you. When I was 27, a gal that we went to high school with her dad tried to blow his head off, and he wasn't successful. So they had a fundraiser for him at the local Baker Street pub, which used to be the spot. If you know, then you were there. They had one in Northwest Houston near Willowbrook Mall and another one in Rice Village, both fire like Hayana. Real good time. So I get a bite from Star. He was calling to ask if I wanted to go halvesies on a raffle ticket at this fundraiser for this guy. Now, my first inclination was to decline because I happen to believe offing yourself is probably the most selfish thing you could do. I put in a $5 bill for this raffle ticket. Star and I went halvesies. And I show up at Baker Street Pub for the drawing, hoping to see a bunch of my old friends. And as soon as I walk in, Star Diggity is doing cartwheels around the bar. And when he sees me, he comes running and jumps into my arms, like reverse wheelbarrow style. And he's screaming, "We won! We fucking won! Oh my God!" He's going crazy. So we arrive in Puerto Vallarta. We're staying in a 5-story villa on the side of a mountain overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Infinity pool, swim-up bar, cleaning staff that cleaned our rooms every day, and a chef that made so many meals for us that sometimes we just stay in the pool drinking because, you know, we would just pass. We weren't hungry. Meanwhile, he's making this huge spread 3 times a day. One of the reasons I was so grateful that friends came to visit us here in Prague is because I know how hard it is to get friends on the same schedule to do a vacation. We had, I want to say it was 8 full round-trip tickets and accommodation fully paid for. And we actually couldn't find enough people who could get off work, or maybe they just didn't like us. I don't know. But we couldn't find enough people to go on this trip, which is crazy to think about now. But we couldn't find enough people to go. No problem. We were still going to roll like 5 deep. Well, my buddy Chase shows up to check in for the flight, and his passport was expired. So he couldn't make it. Doubt he'll make that mistake again. So we went, just the 4 of us. And the highlight of the trip for me, right next to the mountain where we were perched on, there was a huge jungle. And they had a sign saying that this is where the movie Predator was filmed. So we venture out into the jungle and we find a bunch of little ponds. So one of us would swim out to see how deep it was. And then we'd go on the rocks and these little cliffs that sat above the pond. And then we'd jump into the pond. And then it started raining, torrential downpour. It was one of the funnest days of my life. 2 things I've discovered through my travels that have made my travels better. 1, riding a lime scooter through beautiful old cities like Budapest and Prague. And 2, just jumping off shit. That is so fun. My buddy and I did that in Croatia. We jumped into the Adriatic Sea from high cliffs. It's exhilarating stuff. Then, of course, I had to try bungee jumping with the wife in Australia. There's a first for everything. And a last. Because I ain't doing that again. You couldn't say, B. Diddy, here's 50 grand. Let's go bungee jumping. Because, well, one, you can't call me B. Diddy anymore. Now, give me that 50K and let's go take a swan dive off a mile high platform somewhere. Let's talk more Diddy. Did you happen to see the viral video of his bodyguard talking about he and Meek Mill? Oh, man. If you haven't, you might want to skip the first part. But the second part is hilarious. He says, y'all didn't believe me. Then I played the audio of Puff beating Meek backside. And it gets even funnier from there. It's worth a watch. But that's not to dismiss the awful things that Diddy is being accused of. Put that Mr. Combs in a cage for the rest of his life if he was drugging people. And fry that motherfucker if he was doing anything to kids. Here's what I think is going on right now. Those who know that Diddy has them blackmailed, has them on tape, I don't think they're saying anything. But those who don't have anything to hide, a la sober bodyguards and Kanye and 50 Cent, they're already talking, and they have been for a long time. If Diddy survives this ordeal, literally, meaning if he doesn't go out like Epstein, that dude will be singing like Adele. And when he starts singing, he's going to go after anybody who talked. Take LeBron. If that dude gets on his high horse, as he's wont to do in the past, Diddy's going to slide somebody a copy of LeBron and a freak off, slide somebody $500,000 and expose that dude. Just one man with a microphone's opinion. But isn't it curious that Mace, I used to love Mace, he quit Bad Boy in his prime to become a gospel singer. Same dude who said, why try? I'm a thug. I'm a die high. Mason Betha. He just quit the game and started gospel singing, and we hadn't heard from him since. That's a little powerful testimony in itself, I think. Right now, this is coming out of nowhere, but I'm sporting a sweet mustache. No connection to making movies of the pornographic variety. I don't know why I thought of this, but oh, probably because it felt like I had something in my nose, but it was just a whisker. Anyway, I'm not doing the handlebar thing. I'm not offering rides on it or anything. Hey, girl. So by no means does my stash represent a desire to make porno movies or host parties where everybody's going to wear white. No orgies here, not even overseas. I like to cruise with my eyes open. You feel me? Haktua. Who wants to talk about money? As the great Zig Ziglar once said, money isn't everything, but in terms of needing it to live, it's reasonably close to oxygen. So let's talk money. As I burn through tons of money traveling across the Eurozone, I want to give you some suggestions on how you can avoid doing the same. I'll also share ideas on how to spend and save and invest better. Whether your back is up against a wall, see one of my recent blog articles, or maybe you're a multimillionaire with extra cash just sitting in the bank and you want to do something with it, hopefully make it grow. First thing you should know before we start, none of what I say should be construed as investment advice. If you take investment advice from some podcaster hopping trains around Europe, that's on you, bro. I don't recommend investments. This show is for entertainment purposes only. So let's talk about spending money on experiences versus things and why that's so important if you aim to live a happier, more fulfilled life. One, it's been proven that when we spend money on things, we enjoy them less than we thought we would. But when we spend money on experiences, we tend to enjoy those experiences more than we thought we would. Secondly, planning an experience in advance has value. There's joy to be had just in anticipation of your family trip, for example. And third, I would say you can't put a price tag on making memories with those you love. You can't quantify the return on those memories. We only know that you get psychological and emotional benefits from those memories for years to come. Not to mention when those memories are made in the form of a vacation, you get more knowledge about the world and of yourself. Bennies like turtles all the way down. Now, how can you make a trip with a minimal budget? I've got a few ideas. When I travel, both domestically and internationally, I usually book through Escape Houston. The site is a data aggregator. They basically scrape the web for what I call flash sales. So when flights go super cheap, they're usually only available for 48 hours or so. So you have to jump on it right away. But most international flights that I've taken by way of Escape Houston, I want to say the average ticket cost round trip, even to places like Bangkok or Budapest, $500. The more flights and train travel that you can book in advance, the more money you'll save. There's a reason when you book a flight the week of that it's so expensive. And I can tell you from just working in the corporate world, because I would regularly book those flights, sometimes the day before. When you're trying to nail down a prospective customer or client, it's hard to say, Mr. Customer, I'll be in New York 17 days from now. Are you free that Tuesday morning at 10? It's not going to work. And time kills all deals, as any person in business knows. It is much easier to ask if he'll be able to meet tomorrow or Tuesday. He says yes, and then you book the flight right away. Yeah, it's a cost to your employer, but they're hoping that the amount of money that you've spent is an investment, that the $600 round-trip ticket plus hotel stay plus rental car, meals, they're hoping all of that is an investment for which there will be a greater return. So airlines know the exorbitantly high rates they charge for tickets will likely be purchased by business travelers. And if not, they've worked out the numbers to where it's better for them to sell one seat at 3.5 times the cost than an entire row of 3 seats at regular price. They're not stupid. Same is true of train travel in Europe, or flights on airlines like Wizz or Ryanair in Europe. So you take little puddle jumpers like in Hawaii, or if you're going from Bangkok to Chiang Mai, a lot of times you can get those flights for $49 if you book them far enough in advance. Another thing I'll say is staying in Airbnbs versus hotels. Much the same way Uber used to be way cheaper than taxis, or Facebook was free to advertise. I mean, what a godsend to small business that was, when you could post about being a realtor or a mortgage broker or insurance salesperson twice a day, and everyone you know, all your friends were guaranteed to see it. Eventually, these giant companies figured out how to monetize their app by charging you to post. Otherwise, you know, 10%, 5% of your friends will see your stuff. I mean, Instagram and Facebook are nothing like they used to be. IG has basically become a Reels app. Unless somebody pays the man, you're very unlikely to see your friend's posts, especially if you post a link to an outside website. And if you're like me, maybe you use the stories functionality. But for the most part, Instagram is just sending inappropriate, albeit hilarious, reels to your buddies. You see something and you think, oh, who would find this funny? And you send it to them. So Airbnb is no longer a much cheaper option than hotels. However, if you plan to stay in your destination for a while, then Airbnb is the best way I know to save money on lodging. I remember having this conversation with Physician on Fire. He suggested when trying to book 3 weeks, put a month, and often the monthly discount that they apply will be cheaper than booking just 3 weeks. Well, me being such a one-upper, oh, you got a Louis belt made of leather? Well, check out this velvet two-toned Prada hovercraft luggage without wheels. But I said to Physician on Fire, I said, why not see the monthly price and ask if they'll accept less? Worst they can do is say no. A few things I can tell you from the limited time that I've had using Airbnb as a host. When someone wants to stay for an extended period of time, that is like closing a six-figure deal. Because one, if you get somebody staying for a month, you don't have to worry about constant communications with prospects. You don't have to coordinate their entry and their exit. And then when you have an Airbnb, it has to be cleaned every time somebody leaves, even if they stay for 1 or 2 nights. And while the cleaning fees are outrageous for the consumer, especially when you're being asked to take out the trash and don't leave any dishes in the sink, you're wondering, what the hell am I paying $125 cleaning fee for? Well, as a host, to get someone to clean your place at a moment's notice because someone else is checking in the next day, that is not a small task. You have to pay for that sort of convenience. And it's not like they can just go in there and spot clean for an hour. No, they've got to be there while they're not just making sure the place is spotless, but they've got to fill the shampoo bottles, fresh TP roll. The sheets have got to be washed and dried, put back on the bed, and that takes a while. Airbnb is also good when you're traveling with little ones. We're in a one bedroom now, and my daughter has never slept with us before in the same room. She has her own room in Houston. Well, every morning my girl is up before the sun, and unlike at home where she stays playing in her bed till one of us goes and gets her, when she sleeps in the same room, she'll see my wife sound asleep, get out of bed, stare at her closed eyes from point blank range until she wakes up. Speaking of kids, here's a money related question I got a few weeks ago that might interest you. One of my guys asked me, how will you teach your daughter about money and more specifically investing? I said, well, with the first dollar she receives, 10% needs to be given away. 10% goes to savings. That'll teach her not only to be generous, but as the great Jim Rohn once said, it's easy to give $10 or 10 cents out of a dollar, but it's much harder to give $100,000 out of a million. Best to start you early. I like that. But I'd like her not to be shocked and pissed when she gets her first paycheck, too. So when she sees Uncle Sam has taken so much of it, you know, a lot of young people get pissed when they see that for the first time. But this way, she'll get used to not getting the whole dollar, so to speak. Any money she gives me to invest for her, she'll magically find that it's doubled when she gets it back and say she wants a car or she turns 18. Remember, money invested at 10% per annum doubles every 7 years. So I'll credit my own dad with this one, who had a similar arrangement with me. Last week, one of my guys told me that his dad taught him how to save, but he was frustrated that his dad had never taught him how to invest. And the first thing I said was, in his dad's defense, is that when our dads were our age, the market didn't generate nearly the returns of the past, say, 15 years. It's important to remember your parents will generally encourage you to play it safe versus take any sort of financial risk. And the reason for this is because they share in your pain of losing way more than they stand to benefit from your success. So by all means, seek their wise counsel, the wise counsel of your elders. They've lived through way more than we have. But then it's important to draw your own conclusions. Another thing, when she gets to be about 10, she'll get a bike to ride and she'll get a bike to rent. That'll teach her the value of entrepreneurship. And also it'll teach her that profits are better than wages. Then to incentivize good health, this is an idea I stole from Mr. Money Mustache, who is often considered the granddaddy of the FIRE movement. He suggested putting an odometer on your kid's bike and paying them 25 cents a mile. I'll be doing that too. Let's talk tips, because everybody in the club is getting tipsy nowadays, and that's not why. We just returned from Europe, and boy, did I encounter a different tipping culture there. By the time you get used to it, it's time to go back to the States and empty half your wallet to every service provider or anybody who mixes a smoothie, two-thirds if they do their job pretty well. Online, I'll see people fighting over how generous they are. They'll say things like, oh, I tip no less than 25%. And then the next guy trying to one-up says, oh, don't be stingy, bro, minimum 30%. I would say, congrats, fellas, you have bought into the bullshit. What do I mean by that? Well, in the not-so-distant past, the standard tip in America was 15%. Today, 15% isn't even one of the options. And if it is, which it seldom is, it's the one all the way on the left, encouraging you to pick the one in the middle. And there's some psychology in that. Do you know if you ask somebody to think of a number between 1 and 10 that most people will say 7? Or if you say, give me a number between 1 and 100, many people will pick 37. That's true. I've talked about this stuff at a dinner party before, and I watch eyes glaze over, and they're looking at me like, who is this a-hole? Well, he is I, and I am him. And I always know what they're going to say next, which is, if you ever worked as a waiter, you wouldn't feel this way. You know, one of those situations where you can't have a legitimate opinion unless you are a member of said group that you're referring to. Like, oh, you've never been black, or you've never raised a kid with autism on a government salary. Or your opinion on tranny bathrooms doesn't matter because you've never tucked your junk and pretended to be a woman. And that time you pretended to choke the giraffe at a college party to be funny, that doesn't count. Whoa, how do you know that? You waitresses over here way too much at dinner. I remember arguing with this popular blogger in Mexico about tipping, because he was encouraging his readers to tip 35% in Mexico, which is real easy for him to say now that he's made his money in Florida and then retired to a lower cost of living country such as Mexico. Does it not occur to him that by tipping this exorbitant amount that he's raising the cost for everybody who wishes to do what he did, which is to retire to a place with lower cost of living? I don't care if you whistle while you work or twerk. You are not getting a 35% tip from me. And it almost seems like they're trying to raise the percentage to correspond with the increase in inflation. And to me, that just shows economic illiteracy or psychological manipulation. One of the two. We were in Germany our first morning in Berchtesgaden. We had breakfast about 50 feet from where we were staying. Nothing swank. I got a ham and cheese croissant, maybe a cappuccino. The wife got something similar. Your basic breakfast in the Alps. And my daughter had gotten yogurt with fruit, since some of you have told me you listen and take notes. There you go. So when the bill came, I get up to pay at the register, and the lady says it's going to be €27.20. So I give her €30.20, thinking I'll have less coins hassling each other in my pocket. I don't like my pockets real fat, at least not since the advent of debit cards, you know what I mean? So this waitress lady makes what I call turd face, which is as it sounds. You do or say something, and the other person suddenly looks as though they've sniffed a turd, like a foul odor has been placed right underneath their nose, and they pull back like their head does like E.T. or a tortuga. And by the way, La Tortuga's best tortillas in Houston, since you're curious, I know. So as I'm paying for breakfast, I had forgotten that there are no €1 or €2 bills. They use coins for €1 and €2, hence the sour face on this waitress. So she says to me, "Was your meal not okay?" And I said, "It was good, thank you." And she says, "Well, then how come you don't tip?" And I say, "Well, I don't tip anyone who asks. That's kind of my rule." I had planned to leave it on the table, but come to find out, that's not something that people regularly do in Germany. It's actually considered rude in a lot of parts of Europe to leave a tip on the table. Also, I'd remembered the night before, when the Airbnb host took us out for dinner, that €1 or €2 is enough tip. That's what he said. He didn't say what the meal needed to cost to give €1 or €2. He just said €1 or €2 is fine. The first time I ever visited Paris, I was having lunch on the Champs-Élysées, not far from the Arc de Triomphe. That time, it probably was a little swanky. And when the bill came, it was €60. So I was unaccustomed to not leaving a tip. I didn't know the rules. This was 2003. This is probably pre-internet, pretty much pre-internet. So I give the guy €12. And I turn around to ask him where the restroom is. And I see a group of four dudes, four waiters, looking down at the receipt, pointing and laughing at me for leaving a tip. I mean, they thought I was so stupid. And they weren't laughing because of the cool sunny shades I was wearing. So this is a story I'm not proud to share. I had bought a pair of Dolce & Gabbana sunglasses on the Champs-Élysées when in Paris. When I returned to Zwijndrecht, which is where my mom and stepdad were living at the time, he says to me, "How much did you spend on those sunglasses?" And truth be told, they were probably like €100. He said, "You're going to lose them in a few months," implying that I was stupid. Au contraire, mon frère, a phrase I learned while trying to negotiate the price down on the sunglasses, I still have the sunglasses. And guess what? The same way fashion trends just need to be old enough for those wearing them not to remember when the fad ended and that whatever attire stopped being cool. Looking at you, mom jeans. The glasses came back in style 20 years later when old Joe Burrow wore the same pair at a press conference. What do you know? Though his were pink. And as my daughter likes to say, "Dada, mans don't wear pink." So mine are blue, blippy colors. She likes blippy. When I put them on, I feel all righteous and badass, maybe even a little invincible. Like I could take Odor at second base in a fight. No, probably not. Not really. Those stunner shades can barely take on the sun. I'll shoot you straight. Plus, I'm not half as cool as Joe Burr. I don't even smoke cigars. Want to know the reason? Well, one, I don't have a son. If I had a son, I'd definitely smoke a cigar. Two, I'm no Bill Clinton. That is to say, if I'm going to smoke, I'm going to inhale. Get your heads out the gutter. I'm just pillow talking here, dishing out on all y'all. Who in their 40s is still quoting rap lyrics? Should I be embarrassed? I don't know, Doc. That's not an emotion I'm sure I have. Besides, as Seneca once said, hang on to your youthful enthusiasms. You'll be able to use them better when you're older. And speaking of writers from centuries ago, and maybe speaking of inhaling, and, well, speaking of bills for that matter, did you know that when Bill Shakespeare's body was excavated, they found four pipes at the excavation site? True story. They said the chemicals in the pipe resembled that of cannabis. And though results were inconclusive, very high likelihood old Bill Shakespeare was writing from a cloud. Last thing I'll say on tipping. Though I've never worked as a waiter, I have worked as a busboy for $6 an hour. There was no tip out to me. That wasn't a thing. And I also worked at Burger King for $4.20 an hour. And one time, this old man left 50 cents on the table for me when he left. And I remember thinking, for this hour, I made $4.70. Felt like a big baller. And for that reason, my biggest tips have actually been at Burger King. Well, and Waffle House. And Cracker Barrel. I had this little sweetheart one time who did a great job. I got to know her a little bit while she was waiting on me. She shared with me that she had recently been diagnosed with leukemia. So I left her something I thought might make her day. And what do you know? She ran out of the parking lot as I was getting in my car and she was crying and she gave me a big hug. One of those things you don't forget. All right, let me finish with this week's installment of Kids Say the Darndest Things. I'm in the master bedroom just chilling on the floor and my daughter walks in and she sees that the light's not on. So she jumps and tries to flip the switch up to turn the light on. And as she doesn't succeed, instead she falls on her butt and she looks over at me and says, I fell down like a clown. And her face lights up when she realizes that she made a rhyme. And so she says, I'm going to save that one for the rhyming game. Because we like to play this game where we come up with a sentence and the words have to rhyme. So I said, that's a good one. Save it. And she says, no, Dada, you can have that one. I said, no, you keep it. I've seen a clown around town, you know, trying to demonstrate that I can come up with one on my own. And she doesn't get what I'm doing. And she looks at me real serious and says, just one clown or 1,086? Which one? Pretty sure it was one. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Till next time.